We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Last week, we brought you part one of the disappearance of Ralph Jeanmarie. Ralph was a 38-year-old black man who disappeared after walking out of his hotel room in Barrie, Vermont, just over a year ago. Since then, the police have publicly stated that they believe foul play was involved, but that they are no closer to getting answers now than they were a year ago. What a lot of critics are asking is why. Is this case simply too difficult to crack? Or did Barrie police not put the necessary effort into securing justice for Ralph Jean Marie because of the color of his skin and his socioeconomic status? This week, we're going to be delving into the police investigation and bringing you updates, including an arrest that was related to this case that happened just right before we recorded this. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Ralph Riz Jean Marie. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone. Now, before we get into part two of Ralph Jean Marie's story, I want to give a big shout out to our newest patron, Stacy. Thank you so much for your support. And if you are interested in supporting us via Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/attwgpod. When we left off last week, Bridget Huckins, Ralph's significant other, was having a hot girl summer. Just 2 weeks after Ralph's disappearance, she was Facebook official with Chris Elmer, one of the men who was rumored to be at the Hollow Inn Motel with them the night that Ralph allegedly walked off after getting into an argument with Bridget. But a few weeks after that, she apparently moved on to Thomas Partlow, who then went and threatened to kill a bunch of people in the Facebook comments of his relationship status post. Their relationship, which seems to have begun in May of 2020, presumably lasted throughout the summer when the couple found themselves in some serious legal hot water. In August of 2020, both Bridget Huckins and Thomas Partlow were arrested, but not for anything having to do with her missing boyfriend. This arrest came after a months-long investigation into the drug overdose of a man named Jeffrey Cameron back in June of that year. Both Thomas and Bridget were charged with selling or dispensing a regulated drug with death resulting. So basically, they sold this guy heroin, like a bad batch of heroin that had fentanyl in it. And so he died.
Yikes.
So Bridget has a status conference scheduled for June 22nd. I don't really know what that is. Do you know what that is?
I mean, it depends on the jurisdiction. A status conference could mean a lot of different things. I would have to know the parameters of what her detainment is.
Yeah, I don't know. So I just found this on the court docket, basically, and it just said status conference. Like, there wasn't any more information.
Yeah, I mean, that could be, like, a continuance or you know. Or it could be something more. It just kind of depends on where she's detained and, you know, is there a mental health issue associated with it, that type of thing.
Well, what I think is interesting, and I don't know if this will change or have any effect on this status conference that's going to be on June 22nd, but Partlow has a change of plea hearing scheduled for June 7th.
Oh.
So 2 weeks before that.
Yeah. I mean, that might have something to do with it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if he pleads guilty, that might change her status. Mm-hmm. She may decide that she wants to join the plea agreement if there is one. You know, there's all kinds of things, subtle nuances that could be occurring there.
Yeah,
or it could just be just a continuance. Like, hey, this is where we are. Maybe there was a continuance because the lawyer wanted more time to do some more research or something like that, and the judge just kind of wants to check in on them and see where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So. What I find interesting, so they were arrested in August of last year. So, I mean, when they have these hearings, that'll be 10 months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, justice is slow.
Yeah. Another interesting name popped up while I was looking at that court docket, Christopher Elmer.
Oh, the ex-boyfriend, right?
Right.
Now,
right.
Now the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. So he has a few hearings set as well. So he has a status conference for May 27th, just actually a few days from now, and a jury draw on June 22nd.
What was his original charge for?
Well, I was wondering the same thing because, you know, he wasn't mentioned in relation to this arrest at all. Yeah. So I was like, what's going on with him? So I Googled it, and apparently on May 5th, 2021, police allege that Elmer stabbed a man named Adam Coro in the hand while they were at the Barry laundromat.
Fight over a dryer?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Like, you know, when people just like put their clothes in the dryer and never come back. No, I have no idea. They don't say what it was about. But Elmer took off before police arrived. And he was later picked up, obviously, along with a woman named Alicia Wood, who police say had a felony amount of heroin and fentanyl on her.
Hmm.
Yeah. So she was arrested at the same time.
She had heroin and fentanyl?
That's what the article said. But what I find interesting is that this stabbing just took place on May 5th, like literally just a few weeks ago. And he's already getting a jury draw on June 22nd.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I could think in that case is that as far as discovery, there's very little discovery and that both attorneys kind of want to fast track this to basically to get it off the docket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So anyway, so they're all hanging out kind of together, probably passing each other in the halls
in
of the
jail.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so that was that. Like, and that was just a little side note. I mean, I don't know. Like, when I was writing this episode out, it was just really hard for me to not end every paragraph with, so there's that. Like, because it's just one thing after another.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now, but, you know, back to like Ralph's specific case, activists are continuing to get loud about what they view as a mishandling of the case. They held a rally in Burlington, Vermont in April to demand justice and to get more people to fight for Ralph. But apparently only a few dozen people attended. And organizers did get some criticism for holding it in Burlington instead of Barry. But back in Barry, Police Chief Bombardier held a press conference, and it did not.
I still can't get over his name.
I know.
Bombardier.
Chief Bombardier. Yeah, so he held this press conference in April. Again, all of this was surrounding the one-year anniversary of Ralph's disappearance.
Okay.
But yeah, it didn't go well. And, you know, last week, I think we spent a lot of time talking about Bombardier and Thibault, the Washington County State's attorney, mm-hmm. who, like, were just making some out-of-pocket statements, right. like, throughout this whole thing. And this press conference just completely was just bonkers. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it was so bad that... There's like some, and we have it linked in the blog, but like there was some Vermont website, like a news site that does, it gives the veeps for like just basically like people doing dumb things around the state. And they like gave it to the Barry Police Department for this train wreck of a press conference. Like it was just terrible. So let's get into that. Bombardier said that Ralph's disappearance was suspicious, but that they were no closer to solving it than they were a year ago, which like way to just come out swinging at this press conference.
I mean, why even hold a press conference then? if you've got no updates on the case, like what are you doing?
I don't know.
You're just placating people because it's the anniversary?
That's what it sounds like. He went on to say that they haven't identified a potential crime scene, nor have they found anyone who they think wanted to harm him.
Except for Chris Elmer, who very quickly becomes boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And now, fast forward, is in jail for stabbing somebody in the hand?
Yes.
But that wasn't... That happened after this press conference, right?
Oh, yes, it did.
Timeline-wise.
Right.
So the stabbing doesn't...
Correct. Yeah. So at the time of this press conference,
Elmer had not stabbed anybody in a hand at a laundromat.
Okay. So
to be fair.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Let's take that back.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you're right. So you do have this guy who was allegedly in the motel room that night who quickly began dating Bridget. You have right, Bridget.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No, it doesn't. But you also have Bridget, who does have a history of domestic violence involving right. Ralph.
Yes.
You know, you have drugs involved.
Yeah.
You have a possible third man, Chris Dunn, who was the maintenance man at the motel.
Right.
So, like, you do have people who, you know, folks...
Should be prime suspects.
Yeah, and it's not... And we have no idea if... You know, to going back to what Bombardier said, which is that they haven't identified anybody who wished Ralph harm. We have no idea if Elmer ever wished him harm. We have no idea if this other guy ever wished him harm. Like, the only one we have any indication of any of that is Bridget because of that past history right. with domestic abuse.
Yeah.
So, yes, but at the same time, you know, when a guy allegedly walks out of a motel room at 1 a.m. and is never seen again, like, the one to three people he was with, you know, it seems like that's who you need to be focusing on.
Yeah. And maybe they were, and they're just not bringing that up at the press conference. I don't know. I'm still lost on what the point of this press conference is other than being around the anniversary.
Right. No, I mean, it basically was
giving a status update that says we're in the same spot that we were a year ago.
Yeah, and it just gets worse. Washington County State's Attorney Rory Thibault, who we mentioned a little bit earlier, was in attendance as well, and he gave this doozy of a statement. So again, I mean, you know, what Bombardier just said didn't really seem like it had any point, but this is even worse. Quote, "It's easy to say that this is indicative of a lack of effort or lack of resolve on the part of law enforcement. Nothing could be further from the truth. No single case has had more resources devoted to it by Barry City than the disappearance of Mr. Jean-Marie," end quote. Okay, so on its face, I know you're like, what? That seems like a perfectly fine statement. And sure. But one, before I get to why it's batshit crazy. I do want to point out that it's very reminiscent of his statement at the inquest, which is like, oh, hey, we're doing this inquest because people say we're not doing our job. So right. He's like still singing the same tune.
Yeah.
In April. Like, he's very defensive, right? Like, it seems like every time he speaks about this case, it's just from a very defensive, this isn't my fault place.
Yeah, which is interesting because I know district attorneys aren't necessarily political figures, but they kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems weird that he's being defensive and just being like, hey, we're doing this because you guys wanted it.
Yeah.
In like a kind of a backhanded, like, shut the F up to his constituents.
Oh yeah, for sure. And he is. It's very like, well, I don't know what the problem is. We've done everything, so it's not our fault that the murderer didn't just like come up and tell yeah, us that they right. killed him. Like, what else are we supposed to do?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, yeah, very... Yeah,
which, you know, hey, look, I get it. Looking at the facts of the case, there's very little to go on. But, like, you don't have to be, like, a dick to the people that are, like, calling for justice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That are asking, where's Ralph?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be a dick to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but wait for this.
Oh boy.
So again, the statement on its face, besides being a little defensive, is still like a very reasonable statement to make, right? Right? Okay. 7 Days reporter Colin Flanders was at the press conference as well. And like any good reporter, he decided to like go around and talk to people, you know, in addition to just reporting on what was said at the press conference. The presser was held at the Hollow Inn, the last place that Ralph was seen. Now, directly across the street, which I briefly mentioned last week, were residential homes.
Right. Yeah.
So this is like in a residential area. There are homes directly across the street. So Colin went and knocked on some doors. a woman who lives directly across the street from the motel answered and told him that police never interviewed her.
All the resources, though.
Another guy, two houses down, said the same thing. Colin kept on knocking and found six different people who lived within 100 yards of the motel who were never once asked a single question about what they may have seen either that night or in the days leading up to Ralph's disappearance or the days after. Nothing.
Now, did he also ask if they had seen anything that night?
Yeah, so he did. And they were like, well, we don't really remember anything, but it was a year ago. So right. Like maybe if somebody had asked me a year ago, I would have a different answer.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. All resources, though, devoted to this.
Yeah, and several of them said that they didn't even know anyone had gone missing from the motel until like several months later.
Wow.
So they especially weren't thinking about that night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it's one thing that if you don't remember something on this particular night a year ago, but if you don't even realize that that night is significant until several months after that night, like there's no way, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's not, you don't have memories from insignificant nights.
Right. And that's the thing. And nobody's
insignificant to you.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And nobody's saying that like Ralph was dragged out onto the lawn of the motel and shot or anything like that. Like nobody's saying that it would have been something so crazy that it would have stuck out in anyone's mind no matter what. It could have been something as simple as like
just seeing him leaving.
Like, oh yeah, I did see a guy walking by.
Yeah.
Or I saw a woman and a guy outside. Or whatever it was, something that wouldn't have even registered for them in any way.
Right. Or I saw a guy walk out of the hotel and then
get into a car.
Get into a car. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, just anything like that. But now it's so far removed, those details are gone from your memory because it was not a significant night to that person.
Exactly. Because I feel like even if it was a week or a year later and you're asking about that, if they would have known the day after that somebody went missing, they still probably would have been able to access something.
Something, yeah.
You know, but when you don't even know until months later and then it's a year later, like there's no way.
There's no memory recall for that. Yeah.
So then Colin went back to Chief Bombardier, was like, hey, tell me more about how you've left no stones unturned. And Bombardier was basically like, oh, shit, my bad. He said that he had never even asked his detectives if they had canvassed the area because it just never occurred to him.
Okay, but to be fair, coming from a chief,
mm-hmm.
he shouldn't have to micromanage his detectives to that level.
Okay. I think that's fair. Sure.
From Bombardier's perspective, mm-hmm. like, you know, he should assume or be able to assume that his detectives, who presumably have had some sort of investigative training
mm-hmm.
and probably have some experience mm-hmm. in investigations, would do something like that. Something as basic as canvassing the neighborhood. That's uniform work. That's not even right. detective level.
Right.
That's like, you know, you see something happen and there's some questions left. You canvass the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So from a chief's perspective, like I can see him, like he's removed from that. You know what I mean?
Okay. I'll give you that. But then he said, so during this conversation with Colin Flanders, the reporter, he's like, oh no, you know, I never thought to ask. Okay. Which fine, fair. But he says, I'll have him get right on that. It's like, all right, cool.
Okay, well, great. Yeah, it's too fucking late now.
Right. But then he said, quote, I just think it escaped their thought process, end quote.
How can it escape their thought process? You have people living right next door to where somebody went missing. I get it. He left the motel at what, 1 a.m, mm-hmm. 2 a.m, somewhere mm-hmm. around there. Like, so yeah, maybe most of them were asleep, but you don't know.
You don't know
if somebody works nights and got home at midnight and, you know, wanted to relax before they went to bed. Maybe mm-hmm. that's their normal routine. Maybe they're just night owls. You have no idea.
No.
That's why you have to ask.
Of course. But so I'll give you, he shouldn't have had to ask his officers if they had canvassed the neighborhood. Yes. I'll give you that.
Okay,
but
thank
I don't know. I guess it just escaped their thought process. Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Okay. But also, bad management style. Don't start making excuses publicly for your employees before you ask them about what they did or didn't do.
Yeah.
Like, you just say, I don't know. I'll have to ask my detectives about what they did or didn't do, and leave it at that with the press, and then go back and be like, hey, detectives, what the fuck? Why didn't you do this basic police work of going across the street and asking the neighbors if they saw anything?
Yeah. Lee Morgan, one of the activists there that day, and remember that name; it's going to come up later. But
Lee Morgan or Lee Morrigan?
Morrigan. They summed it up best saying, quote, they can't even do the fucking bare minimum, end quote.
Yep.
Bobadier and Thibault had the audacity, the unmitigated gall to stand up in front of these people with microphones and cameras and say that they are doing everything in their power to find this man.
Except asking direct witnesses what they saw.
Yeah.
Speaking of direct witnesses.
Yeah.
I may have asked this the last episode. Were the 2 to 3 people in the room questioned?
Yeah, so that is one thing that the police do say. Like, so they don't really say a lot definitively about who was interviewed, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But they did say that they interviewed everybody who was in the motel room that night, though they don't name them. So they only
wouldn't expect them to.
Right, and that's why I keep on saying, like, rumored, allegedly, blah, 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 because the only person that authorities have named that were in the motel room was Bridget.
So, I mean, do we know, did they canvass the other hotel rooms?
No idea.
Is this a motel or a hotel?
It's a motel.
Motel. Okay. So, I mean, we don't know if they knocked on any of those doors.
No.
If they talked to the manager.
No idea.
If they tried to get any CCTV, if that was available, like, we have no idea what they did.
Oh, well, the CCTV does come up.
Okay.
That comes up later in this, because that is a big sticking point. In terms of who else they may have interviewed, I'm not exactly sure. It doesn't actually seem like they interviewed everybody. I don't know. So the only thing I have to go on is Chris Dunn, who I mentioned, the maintenance man, who might have been there that night.
So he may or may not have been in the room.
Right. And so this is tricky, right? Because, like, he's a private person. He has not been named by police. And so I'm hesitant to mention, same thing with Chris Elmer. I'm hesitant to mention people like that in this story. However, they made public Facebook posts that were related to this. And to me, when they make a public post, then that kind of makes it a little bit more fair game. So let me go to this post that Chris Dunn made. And I'm not exactly sure. I don't have a date on this because the screenshot just said 4 days ago. But it starts out, it's long. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It starts out, quote, I'm going to say this once and only once until you got a badge and want to interrogate me about my personal life. You can, but until then, keep my name out of your fucking mouths. I'm sick of this shit. Cops know who I am. If they have questions, trust me, they know where to get me. So it's hard to tell. Like, to me, that could go either way. He says cops know who he is. So maybe, like, yes, I've talked to them. If they have further questions, they know where to reach me. Or cops know who I am, but they haven't asked me any questions. Like, I don't exactly know where to go with that.
Say the first part again. If something about if you have a badge.
I'm going to say this once and only once. Until you get a badge and want to interrogate me about my personal life, you can. But until then, keep my name out of your fucking mouths.
Okay, so I mean, it's
because
well, like, it sounds to me like he's spouting off about some social media that linked him to this.
Yeah, because again, the rumor, I mean, this is a small town, right?
Yeah.
And like I mentioned at the very beginning of the first episode on this, is that there are plenty of posts that you can find online that are like person X, person Y, person Z, person, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
These are who killed Ralph, but there's nothing to back it up, right? So, and that's why I don't want to get into all of that specifically.
Yeah. So, well, so maybe this is him venting about something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
And saying, I think, if you're not, until you become a cop,
yeah,
and want to question me, leave me alone.
Right, which I think is very valid. So what I'm trying to figure out from that post is, because he says police know who I am.
Whether
is,
he was ever actually
yeah,
interviewed?
Because I can't really tell from that.
No.
You know, because I think it could be either.
It could. It
that
could, it could
he
be
was,
either way,
you know,
yes.
initially interviewed or that he wasn't, you know, and cops just know that he works there or,
yeah.
or whatever, or that he was there or whatever it was. So I'm not sure. So... to answer the question, that's a very long-winded way of answering it, but yeah, we don't know exactly who was and was not interviewed, except we know that the neighbors were not interviewed. We know that Bridget was interviewed. Like, those are the only two things that I really know for sure at this point. Okay, but back to this, like, shit show of a press conference, which gets even worse.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Oh, God. Well, Thibault gets involved. So at this point, it's just Bombardier. And then... and then Thibault gets involved. So, and I've got to just talk about this reporter, Colin Flanders, a little bit more, because he just did such a masterful job reporting on this. Because 9 out of 10 reporters would have gone to this press conference. They would have listened to what was said. They would have reported what was said. They would have called it a day. But he really went the extra, like, 3 miles. So Colin even talks in this article, which of course is linked on our blog, about how Thibault started getting a little salty with him when Colin started questioning him about the gaps in this supposedly no stones unturned investigation. And I can't even do it justice. So this is just directly from Colin Flanders' article. Quote, asked about the police failure to interview neighbors of the motel, Thibault noted that the department has limited resources and must direct its focus toward the most, quote, promising leads.
Isn't that directly contradictory to what he just said? Didn't he say that this case has the most resources devoted to it?
Mm-hmm. But maybe it's kind of like he's inadvertently... saying that the Barrie Police Department sucks, because if he's saying in one breath, like, no case has ever had more resources devoted to it. And then in the next breath, like, we don't have very many resources, so we're doing what we can. Like, isn't that just saying, like, oh, God, if this is all of what we've got, imagine what everybody else is getting.
Okay.
All right. So this is, I'm going on with from the article here. And this is Thibault talking still. Quote, I'm not going to second guess where they put their priorities. End quote. He said, growing frustrated with the line of questioning, quote, we could play what ifs all day. End quote.
What is he doing?
I don't know, but he's not done. Quote, it's great that you have, I guess, exposed a flaw in the investigation. He later told this reporter, I hope that somebody did see something that leads to some fruitful or productive evidence. End quote. Like, he said, it's great that you have, I guess, exposed a flaw in this investigation. Like, what a tool.
What is he doing?
Other than being a giant tool, I have honestly no idea.
I don't understand the point of his response to that. Like, if he doesn't have to answer questions. Like, I don't understand people that like get confronted by reporters and feel the need to spout off. You don't have to answer questions to reporters. They don't have any more rights than any other citizen at large. Same with cops. You don't have to answer questions ever.
Well, you know what this kind of reminds, this whole press conference reminds me of, is like the second act of an episode of Law and Order where like, the end of the first act, I should say, where, you know, Briscoe and Green or whomever are really like grilling the suspect. And the suspect is like, okay, you're right. Well, I killed her, but, you know, blah, 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 and just confesses, like, for no reason. And you're just like, okay, yeah, they got the guy. That's what they're supposed to do in the show. But it's, at the same time, it's like, stop talking. Like, why are you talking?
It's deeply, like, unsatisfying.
Stop talking. Yes. You don't need to talk.
Yeah, again, thank you. Yeah, like, what? Why? What is the point of, in his mind? I can't wrap my brain around what is the point of him saying these things.
I don't know.
There's zero team effort.
Yeah.
Everybody's just like, well, I don't know. Maybe they suck. Maybe they did something. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. Why? Why are any of these people talking like this?
I don't know. But that's not the only flaw in the investigation that was uncovered during this whole thing. Barry police have sworn up and down for the past year that they did another extremely basic thing that you already brought up earlier. They swear that they pulled surveillance footage from local businesses, but at least one of those businesses, Heath Self Storage, says that they were never asked for footage. And this business has cameras that face the street and is located only a third of a mile from the motel.
Okay, yeah. So most self-storage places, like, I mean, they're ripe for theft.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a lot of them have a lot of cameras.
Yeah.
Covering every angle, including the street, obviously. But, right. Like, yeah, that would... If there's a self-storage place close to a crime scene, like, that's my first go-to. Because... that's a huge insurance liability for them if they don't have CCTV.
And that's interesting because I didn't think about that. Like I only thought of it in that it was a business a third of a mile away. I didn't even think that a self-storage place would have like more cameras than an average place.
Yes. Yeah, covering every angle of the... So you think about it, like mm-hmm. if this is a self-storage place that's outside, so it's not like one of those standalone buildings where all of the garages are like... inside an enclosed building. So if mm-hmm. it's just like garages, basically enclosed by a fence,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not like the fence is unscalable.
Right.
So they would want to have cameras covering all of the alleyways that lead to the garages so mm-hmm. that they could see if anybody jumps the fence and makes it into a particular garage. Most of those places tend to situate themselves where there's limited access, mm-hmm. where there's only one way that a car can legitimately get close from the road, which is where obviously they would have a lot of cameras pointed there, or at least one really good camera.
Right, right.
Again, that would be my first go-to. If you have a self-storage place like right there.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, a third of a mile, yes, sure. It's not directly across the street or anything like that, but I mean... come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's right there. Like you got to go and check it out.
Right. Just ask. And the thing is, and then the owner was like, well, yeah, I mean, they never came and asked us. And we of course don't have anything because everything gets erased after 30 days.
Yeah.
At the end of this press conference, it really just looks like investigators are taking the position of, well, no one has come and told us they killed him. So what else could we possibly do? They keep on saying things like, we're trying to alert the public so people come forward, which is good, but they're literally just asking the community to do their jobs for them. I mean, witnesses coming forward, of course, is an incredibly important part of any investigation, and you do need that, and you do need to make cases public in hopes of that, but like, it can't be the only part. The public can't do your job for you.
Yeah, and it sounds like they missed some very crucial, very basic police work.
Right.
Like, given the facts of the case, from what we know,
mm-hmm.
it is a dead end.
Completely.
Without further investigation on trying to find out what happened to him after he left the hotel, or even if he left at all.
Right. Which, again, I think Bombardier, somebody said somewhere along the lines that they're not even sure if he did leave the hotel alive, right?
Right.
But there have been no mention of any forensics, anything. There have been a lot of rumors that I won't get into about things that people may or may not have seen in the hotel. Again, it's just so...
It's all rumor mill. So
right. And especially, and we really can't talk about that because police say that they've gotten all sorts of tips, including like people have sent them videos of like, hey, this is a video of Ralph being murdered. And it's okay. Not obviously yeah. Right. So when they're getting things like that from people, then we as just random podcasters have to be very careful about, you know, what we talk about and what we don't and what we present as fact. And the fact is, I mean, police are already behind the eight ball through no fault of their own because it was almost 3 days before Ralph was reported missing. Right. Yeah. So that obviously is not their fault. There's nothing they could have done about that, but right. You know, they didn't seem to treat this case with any extra sense of urgency, realizing, hey, we've already lost 3 days. Like we really need to put the pedal to the metal here. And activists, family, and even the neighbors around the hotel think that Barrie police didn't initially take this seriously because Ralph is a Black man and a Black man who is poor and involved with drugs at that. Ralph's cousin Fabiola said, quote, I'm really, really mad. Why are they not interviewing these people? Why not go knock on doors? The fact that Ralph is Black, that's why this case has gone dead. End quote. One of the neighbors that Colin Flanders interviewed said that she was, quote, surprised, but not surprised that police didn't interview her instead of the investigation, quote, I don't think there's been much urgency, end quote. But there is urgency. Ralph Jean Marie was a father, a brother, a cousin, a friend. He has people who love him. His life mattered and his death matters. Ralph was a kind-hearted person who was going through some things and never had the chance to get out of them. As his oldest son told his mother, quote, they didn't give me a chance for my dad to be here for me, end quote. So let's talk about the big ask. Family and activists strongly feel that Barrie police need outside assistance. They want them to bring in the FBI. However, Bombardier says that they don't really have anything that the FBI can assist with.
There is probably truth to that. I mean, right. I don't know what bringing out, at this point, outside investigators to help. I don't see how they could help. The basic police work has already been missed.
Right.
You have no witnesses now. No credible witnesses. Even if somebody says that they remembered something from a year and a half ago or whatever, mm-hmm. like that's going to get destroyed on the stand. And there's no surveillance footage. There's no knowledge of where he is, where he could have gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like an outside agency investigating is probably not going to be able to do much more. The sad fact is that Barrie police, they didn't do it. They didn't do a basic investigation.
No, they didn't. And obviously things have been lost that no agency can get back. Right. Right.
And that's my point.
Right. And I agree with it for the most part. What I do think, and I don't know if it would be best for the FBI. I mean, literally anybody else, I think at this point, but I think it would be helpful for another outside agency to come in and either re-interview or interview for the very first time everybody who was in that room, everybody who they can find at this point over a year later, who was in the motel period that night, every employee of the motel, because you got to understand, like, these people weren't just there that night, right? Like they had been there in the days prior and possibly in the days after. So it's not just about what was seen or not seen or whatever that night. I think there could perhaps be valuable information in the preceding days and the days after Ralph's disappearance. And motel employees would be excellent sources of information for that, as would motel guests. Like, I want to know who was staying in the room next to them, right? I want to know who was staying, you know, 2 days around. Like, I want to know who was staying in the room by the ice machine, by the parking lot, but you know what I mean?
This is, yes, I agree with you. And this is all stuff that should have been handled
Well, of course,
when
it is,
the investigation
but I,
happened.
To me, somebody who was there, who was a more dry, like even more so than the people who lived across the street.
Sure.
Like those people, I think you could absolutely get valuable information from still at this point. Not all of them. I'm sure that, you know, there's a very good chance that the people next to them, we were like, I never saw them. I have no idea. Like I was just there for the night, left the next morning, grabbed a muffin on my way out. But with the employees, with the manager, everybody, like those are the people that I think an independent or outside agency like do need to come and talk to.
Yeah.
Because we saw this in the Kristen Smart case. And I know I'm bringing up Kristen Smart in every single episode we do. But again, like that's what happened. This case took, unfortunately, over 20 years to solve. But people got interviewed and re-interviewed by other agencies.
Right. So I think the problem is that it's not a case for the FBI. So the DA... The DA is local, right?
What? Yeah, the county.
The county. So the county DA can ask for the state AG mm-hmm. to take over the investigation. The state can then take over the investigation and come in, and that would be the outside agency that would right. have jurisdiction over it because it's within the state the state boundaries, and it's a formal request for assistance.
Right.
Now you'd have to check your ego as the county DA,
which he doesn't seem particularly good at.
Correct, but we saw this. It was actually the Supreme Court case that you were at.
Yeah, it was the Curtis Flowers case.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where the justices kept asking over and over again, could this have been handled if you had just asked for the state mm-hmm. to take over the investigation?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer from the arguing attorney was, well, yeah, we just didn't.
Right.
Okay, so in this case, that county DA could mm-hmm. ask the state attorney general to take over the investigation, and then you would get the outside agency investigation.
Yeah because I don't necessarily think that it has to be the FBI. I
don't think there's any grounds for the FBI to take over the case.
Right, and that's fine. But I 100% think that there needs to be an outside agency involved. And so, and this is getting back to Burlington. And I don't know enough about how Vermont works with its policing and everything. But what's interesting is the Burlington Police Commission put out a resolution on April 17th that says, quote, whereas Ralph Jean-Marie, 38 years old, a Barrie, Vermont resident, and a man of color has been missing under suspicious circumstances for 1 year as of April 13th, 2021, and whereas the Barrie Police Department has declared the disappearance to have occurred under suspicious circumstances due to all Mr. Jean-Marie's belongings remaining in his room at the Hollow Inn, including phone, wallet, glasses, and medication, and whereas Chief Bombardier has indicated that over the last year that the Barrie Police Department has exhausted every resource available to them, but has been unable to locate Mr. Jean-Marie during this one-year period, and whereas the current environment with regard to racial disparities in policing and other institutions calls on Vermonters and particularly public officials to ensure that people of color are adequately and vigorously supported and protected by law enforcement, and whereas the public is demanding greater transparency in policing. Be it resolved, the Burlington Police Commission urges the Barrie Police Department to avail itself of all available resources to locate Mr. Jean-Marie and determine his fate, including and in particular to call in the Federal Bureau of Investigation to help solve this case. End quote.
Okay, so many things to say to that.
Okay. I know you kept on making faces at me whenever I said whereas, but that's just how you write resolutions.
Sure.
It's a framework.
Okay. If I suppose if you're a first year paralegal, sure.
No, that's just how they're all like. When I work for the county, like that's just the framework of how they're written.
Okay. Well, it sounds terrible.
Well, sure. But it's just tradition. the Burlington Police Commission is basically a civil review board.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's a little bit different than that. They have a little bit more power than a civil review board, but it's made up of civilians, a mix of civilians and police officers to come to agreements on how the department should be run.
Right. So this resolution doesn't necessarily have any like legal implications. They can't force Barry to do anything.
Right.
It's just more of a public, like, you are making us look very bad. Please stop. Please do something better.
Yeah. But once again, even their calls for the FBI to get involved, I don't think it's the FBI's. It's not within their parameters of jurisdiction or investigative abilities. But I do, I will reiterate, the state's attorney general at this point should be getting involved. Whether it's at the request of the the Washington County district attorney, or maybe the state attorney should step in, the state attorney general should step in and suggest to that DA, hey, maybe we should start taking over this investigation.
Right. And I think that's why it's important that this police commission released that statement. I think that's why it's important
to put political pressure. Yes.
Exactly. I think right. That's why it's important that, you know, they had that rally. I think it's why it's important that we and other people keep on talking about this, because there needs to be public pressure put on the Barry Police Department right now. Like, that seems to be the only way we're going to get anything done. It really sounds like over the past year, Thibault, Bombardier have been really trying to just placate people, like you've said several times.
Seems like it.
And just say, like, you know, we're doing it. Please get off our back. But they're not doing it. And we can't get off their back because Ralph matters. And everybody, and that's why, you know, this case, which is like so many other millions of cases across the company, it's why it struck a nerve with these activists. It's why it struck a nerve with me when I read about this, because I'm just fucking tired of things getting swept under the rug.
And I agree with you. And what's more frustrating to me is that, look, I don't know the crime stats of Barry.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're legitimately overworked as a police department, there are resources available to help.
Right.
And, you know, I just talked about the asking the state attorney general to take over the investigation. It's all about ego and checking your ego for the greater good, which in law enforcement, in law, it's so hard to get past that. It's like you have to be the one to solve the crimes. But okay, if you can't, then you can't, and just own it and be like, hey, I need some help here because we're strapped. And I don't even know if that's the case here in Barry.
Right.
I'm just throwing it out. This is countrywide.
Oh, it is.
There are state DA's offices, state attorney general's offices. There's different counties that have special investigators that can help. I had a friend, a coworker who left my department and went and worked for Pennsylvania State Prosecutor. He was a special investigator with the state prosecutor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he was all over the state doing exactly that. He was assigned to different investigations in different counties, whose counties had asked the state for help. So then he went and investigated the cases and did what needed to be done. Not saying he was like the fucking MacGyver and solved all the cases, but you know, like, it was just an extra person or an extra crew that could come in and help with investigations when you're overworked as a county, as a police department, whatever it may be.
It is important to note that bringing in an outside agency is not going to guarantee that this case gets solved, right?
No, not at all.
And we're not saying that because, you know, this whole time we're talking about like ego and if you can't handle it, bringing in outside agencies. Remember in Alma, Arkansas, with the Morgan Nick case, we saw that immediately. Like day one, Alma police were like, okay,
we can't deal with this, right?
And they brought in everybody they could, right?
Yes.
And unfortunately, ultimately, she still hasn't been found.
Right.
And so, yes, you can do everything you can do and still have the outcome not be what you want it to be. But at least you can say that you truly did everything that you could, as opposed to just getting up and saying it and having it very easily disproven.
Right.
So just as I was about to wrap this whole thing up, I went and did another looky-loo on Facebook, literally just like hours before we started, you know, recording this whole thing. And I found out that there's been an arrest made in this case.
Oh.
But not of anyone who has anything to do with Ralph's disappearance. Lee Morrigan, the activist who told Colin Flanders that they can't trust police to do the bare fucking minimum, police arrested them. Oh, and Lee uses they, them pronouns, by the way, which is why it's going to.
All right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So the day that that 7 Days article came out, the one that I quoted from extensively and is amazing and everybody should read, police allegedly drove an hour in a snowstorm and showed up on Lee's doorstep.
This is Barry PD.
Yeah, two detectives. Lee told the Facebook page, The Black Perspective, quote, "During my research into Ralph's case and background, it was confirmed to me by two sources that security footage was obtained from the hollow by police officers. I haven't seen the footage. I don't have the footage. To my knowledge, the only people who have the footage are police. I confronted Chief Bombardier at the press conference on April 13th, the one-year mark of Ralph's disappearance. I asked him to confirm the existence of security footage, and he said he has never confirmed or denied any footage exists." End quote. All right, so basically this article comes out a week later, and two detectives show up at Lee's door. They want to know who Lee's source was. Now, they didn't ask during this if Lee had seen the tape or if they had any information about Ralph that, you know, could help with the investigation. They were solely interested in who gave them this information. And the detectives during this asked Lee not to record them, but Lee did anyway. They told the detectives that they would, quote, "only talk in an official capacity on the record, not unannounced on my doorstep in a snowstorm," end quote.
Okay, so we have these two Barry police detectives that drive an hour away in a snowstorm.
And I think, to be fair, I think snowstorm was being a little bit dramatic because I did watch the video and it was definitely snowing, but it wasn't like a blizzard.
Okay. Well,
but in any case.
Okay, whatever. They drive an hour.
And it is Vermont.
An hour, yeah. So it snows every day. Okay. But so they drive an hour away just to ask them who their source is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether these are the same detectives that were assigned from the beginning, but it.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Hasn't been that long. So they're willing to drive an hour to find out who leaked information about surveillance footage or CCTV footage, I should say. But they failed to go across the street from the motel and interview people that lived there.
Yes.
So to me, that sounds like they're trying to look for a rat in the department.
I guess. Yeah, but that seems to be their primary concern. Because again,
finding out who that source is not.
Has nothing to do with
Ralph.
That's
not going
right?
to lead to finding Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the purpose of that? What's the purpose of going down there and asking them that?
The following Monday, Lee receives notice that they were to appear in front of a judge.
For what?
The judge compelled them to release their source.
Why? How is that going to further the investigation?
I don't think it is about furthering the investigation. I think it's about trying to find a rat in the department or whatever. But no, it's not. But this is, so they haul Lee in front of the judge. Judge compelled them to release the source. Lee refused. The judge threatens Lee with the contempt of court. They still refuse. The judge eventually said that he wouldn't charge them that day, but would charge them later. And then about a week ago, Lee Morrigan was charged with one count of criminal contempt of court. So their arraignment was on May 20th, but thanks to Colin Flanders answering my question on Twitter, thank you, Colin, I found out that the judge granted a 30-day extension and Lee will be back in court for this on June 24th, 2021.
For what? I mean, what legal basis does this have?
Yeah.
I'm so confused. So they have a source that says that the police have CCTV footage
from the motel.
Because it doesn't, and it doesn't even say what was viewed.
No, as far as I know, it doesn't. So, but maybe the source could have said, "Hey, they have it. It has X, Y, and Z on it." But what Lee Morgan makes clear is that they have never seen the footage. Right? They have never been in possession of the footage.
Right.
They have no actual firsthand knowledge of the contents of the footage. All Lee Morgan was trying to do was get Bombardier to confirm that the footage exists. Because as you can imagine, this has been a huge question for the past year of, was there CCTV at the motel? Did you pull it? And the Barrie police have refused to answer that question.
This sounds like a huge First Amendment issue.
Well, no, but it's not though, because so.
Like, how can a judge get involved and compel somebody to reveal a source when you're?
Because they made this part of that inquest, and so they compelled Lee to testify as part of this secret inquest, and Lee is refusing to cooperate. And so like, that's kind of where it's going. And so when I was first reading this, I'm like, well, of course Lee doesn't have to reveal their source, but
it's all hearsay.
Well, but the laws that I was kind of, that were in my head, I was thinking Shield laws, but those only apply to journalists and Lee isn't a journalist. Lee is an activist. So the Shield laws in Vermont don't apply to them. So, yeah, so that's their thing.
That's a real fine line, though.
So my boy Colin wrote about the arrest for 7 days and spoke with Rory, our old pal. And he said that they were trying to find out if the video that Morgan's sources allegedly saw, quote, the same or something different from what law enforcement has been interested in, end quote.
Ooh. Who was this that just said that?
Thibault.
The DA?
Yeah.
Say the quote again.
He wants to know if the video that Morgan's sources allegedly saw were quote, the same or something different from what law enforcement has been interested in.
Has been interested in.
Uh-huh.
They don't have the footage.
Ugh.
They don't have the footage.
Oh, God. What a fucking nightmare.
They don't have the footage. Is interested in.
I know, that's what I was afraid. I was kind of afraid of that. Like,
no, they don't have the footage.
The
way he, now granted, he up to this point has come across as an idiot, so maybe he misspoke, but the way he said it, they don't have the footage. They're interested in the footage because they didn't get it initially. And that's why the judge is agreeing to compel Lee to turn over their source. Because if somebody does have that footage, the police are interested in it because they haven't seen it yet.
I really don't want to believe that.
I hope I'm wrong, but that's how I'm hearing it.
Well, okay, so Thibault went on to say, quote, there are people who are deliberately seeking to inject false information or obscure the reality of the circumstances of the disappearance. When individuals are out there claiming to have seen firsthand critical information in the case, investigators have an obvious interest in meeting with them, end quote.
No, you don't. No, you don't. If that's his idea of investigators, quote unquote, what did he say? Like turning over every rock? Their priorities need to be realigned to the investigation. If you're chasing down leads based on rumors of people may or may not have seen something, like, what are you doing in the investigation then?
Right. And what's irritating, I mean, everything's irritating about this, but like, I don't even know if Lee has any knowledge of what's on this tape or what isn't on this tape. All Lee was trying to do at that press conference was to get the Barry Police Department to confirm or deny if the tape even exists.
Yes, right.
They weren't asking what's on the tape. They weren't asking like, hey, I heard that X, Y, and Z was on the tape. Can you confirm or deny that? All they asked was, does this tape exist? And Bombardier refused to answer, just as he's been refusing to answer for the past year.
Because they don't have it. And that would be an incredible embarrassment for the Barry PD.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's what
and,
it is.
And that does make sense if with like what Thibault's saying, if you know they have interest in it, because if they don't have it, but if they think it's out there somewhere.
Right. Then yeah. They have interest in it.
Right. But to be clear, that is not what Lee's source said. Lee's source said that the Barry PD has it and the Barry PD is the only like entity that has it.
Right. So if that is true, and then they bring Lee in, compel them to reveal their source, that's a witch hunt to find out who's spilling the beans on this. That's not directly involved with the investigation. However, if they do not have the footage, then there's legal justification for a judge to compel Lee to turn over the source
so they can get to the bottom of like
get the footage
right.
that they missed when Ralph first went missing. Turn it over to the state attorney general.
Yeah. And you know, what's so interesting and terrible about this is like, if that's the case, like let's say that Barry Police does not have this footage, right? If Bombardier had answered the question that Lee asked at the press conference and said, we do not have CCTV. We are unaware of the existence of CCTV from the motel from that night. And then detectives came to Lee Morgan and said, hey, who is the source?
Right. That's different.
That is different. And Lee,
it's totally different,
probably would have been more inclined to tell them. Yes. Right. But at this point, from Lee's perspective, why would they expose somebody and, you know, send them possibly through the justice system? Like,
yeah,
right.
100%.
But if it turns out, if it's like this source is just feeding Lee and possibly other people just lies, then yeah, maybe be like, oh yeah, no, it was like Officer Daniels or, you know, just whoever who said that to me. And then, yeah, maybe you go take care of it, whatever. But like they didn't, right? They wouldn't confirm or deny. So Lee Morgan was like, no, I'm not going to give you this information.
To me, it just sounds like they bumbled this entire investigation from the start, and they weren't expecting such a public outcry, and now they're going back and trying to cover their ass.
Yeah. So do you want to hear more from Thibault?
Oh, boy. Sure.
He says that charging Morgan is based on principle.
You can't charge somebody based on principle. You have to charge them on legality.
Well, apparently, you know, like we
principle
said.
Principle of what? Okay. Let's okay, hear. Okay.
He says, and in my mind, this tone is just like so condescending. Quote, on one hand, being a champion and advocate for Mr. Jean-Marie, and yet having the opportunity to meaningfully contribute to the investigation they've been a critic of, declining to do so in the face of legal peril, end quote. Quote, I would certainly hope that Morgan and others in that position would prioritize getting to the truth of the matter, end quote.
But Lee never said that he had the footage.
Exactly. In fact, he specifically said he did not have the footage.
Right. So the principle that he's talking about is finding out who has the footage.
Oh, and also, like, I'm super done with them all. Anyway, the identity of the source doesn't even really matter, because though Morgan won't name
the
person or persons, they did say that police have already spoken to them during the course of the investigation. So it's not like some new secret person that the police don't know about.
Okay, well, if that's true, then what is the point of bringing Lee into this?
It's the principle.
He didn't break any laws.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know, like the whole inquest thing and the whole, like, it gets to me, that's sticky and, you know, very Vermont-y. And I don't really know, like, what all the rules are.
What does an official inquest mean? So right, that sounds now, like the Spanish Inquisition. What is it? What does that mean?
But like right now he's being held in, he's being charged with contempt.
No, I understand that. And, right. And I understand that that's, you know, a minor offense, mm-hmm. but that has larger implications in a person's life. You know, like,
no, of course it does.
You can't just willy nilly throw that around just to intimidate somebody to get them to reveal their source. That's absurd.
Yeah. And as far as Lee Morgan is concerned, their arrest isn't about justice or upholding the law or helping with Ralph's case.
It doesn't sound like it to me either.
Yeah. It's about retaliation because they're butthurt about what Lee has said about them. Lee told Colin Flanders, quote, "I and the activist community are being sent a message," end quote.
Yeah, I agree. I don't, normally I can see the law enforcement perspective behind things, but mm-hmm. this is baffling to me. And this is treading a very dangerous line of what you consider a journalist or what you consider an activist and what you can and can't arrest somebody for. That's a very dangerous line for anybody in law enforcement to be treading. And like, I also get it that it's not the Barry PD doing it at this point. Now you're talking about a DA and a judge, mm-hmm. but that's so dangerous. That's calls for abuse of power, overstepping lines, boundaries that exist. Like, you can't just intimidate somebody on what? On nothing. I don't even understand what they're going for here.
Yeah, I mean, either way, it's not going to help them find Ralph.
Right, and that's my point. It doesn't further the investigation.
Right, it doesn't. And so Lee says that if anyone is inclined to help, you can do so by sharing his post on the Black Perspective. So that's the Facebook page that he made that post on. So you can share it so more people are aware. And you can email our buddy Rory Thibault at rory.thibault, and that's T-H-I-B-A-U-L-T, at vermont.gov, and demand that the charge is dropped. But in interest of fairness, Lee posted this video of the interaction with the detectives on their Facebook page. They might have done it as a Facebook Live. I'm not sure. But in any case, the video, at least as of this recording, was up on the Facebook page. And if it's still there, I'm going to put it on our blog. And a lot of the comments under this video, including from fellow activists, are negative and accuse Lee about making this about themselves and not Ralph. And so I get that. Like, one of the activists was angry that Lee kind of made that march or whatever in April in Burlington, because they're like, you know, what was the point of that? Like, that's not where we need to be focusing.
Okay, but wait, didn't the commission issue a statement after that?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe that was the point. Round up,
broader support.
Yes, more political support. Yeah. other than activists.
Right. So I'm just trying to share like. Yeah. What else I saw, you know, because people are upset. However, what I will say is that a lot of the comments were like, you should have just cooperated with the police. You know, you've been so critical that they're doing nothing. Here they are driving an hour trying to do something and you're stonewalling them, which is one of my least favorite stances that people take about police interactions of like, oh, you should just cooperate with them. Because there are plenty of times where, no, you should not.
And again, in this particular instance, how is them finding Lee's source?
Whom is somebody that they have already talked to in the course of this investigation?
According to Thibault, mm-hmm. right?
No, according to Lee.
According to Lee. Okay.
Yeah. So Lee said, like, this is not, I'm not telling you who it is, but this isn't a new person. I'm not hiding some secret witness from you. Because they want to know who the leak is. That's it. That is it. That's the beginning of the end.
Unless
what Lee said.
Unless. So Lee said it was somebody that they already know.
Mm-hmm.
But the but maybe Barry PD, in their further bumbling of this case, they don't know who it is, and they've never seen the footage, and that's why they want the source.
Well, I'm sure they don't know who it is, and I'm praying that you're wrong about them never having seen the footage, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't look good.
I'm at a loss. I mean...
Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, the Barrie police do not seem to be expending their energy and their apparently limited resources on what really matters in this case.
Yeah.
Which is finding Ralph Jean Marie. They've cited limited resources as to why they haven't gotten further along in the investigation, but can send two detectives out in a snowstorm to harass an activist who lives an hour away. They said that they'd release any and all information that could help find Ralph, but refused to say whether or not surveillance footage from the motel even exists. They refused to call an outside agency, despite the Burlington Police Commission writing a resolution urging them to do so. This case is current. This case is active. Please share Ralph's story. Share this episode. Share the articles and the Facebook pages that we've used as sources. Use the Justice for Ralph hashtag and keep an eye out for Silent City, which is that documentary I mentioned in last week's episode that's currently being made. Let's use our collective voices to let Barry know that we care about Ralph and we want to see his friends and family get answers. Ralph Jean Marie has been missing from Barrie, Vermont since April 13th, 2020. He was 38 years old at the time of his disappearance. He is a black man, about 5 foot 10 inches tall and 140 pounds. His nickname is Riz. He has tattoos on his arm, including a cross on his shoulder. He is legally blind without his glasses and has sickle cell anemia, for which he takes medication. If you have any information about what happened to Ralph Jean Marie, please contact the Barrie Police Department at 802-476-6613. Or you can submit a tip anonymously to the Vermont State Police by texting keyword VTIPS to 274637, which spells out crimes. You can see all the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual
If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.